We're going to cross over live now to the Lebanese capital, where Sayed Hassan Nasrallah, the Secretary General of Hezbollah, is speaking. Let's listen in.
It reaches a phase where Abu Abdullah Hussein reached in Karbala. Was the victor, and with very, very small capabilities, because the confrontation in Karbala was first and foremost, as we say on all the Ashura occasions, it was a battle in defense of Islam. Today, the Muslim clerics and the Muslims in general, they are now up against this task in confronting the terrorist Takfiri groups. In this confrontation, we begin only by defending our territories and defending peoples and minorities or majorities, and defending the moderates and the governments and a political map and the future of the region. But it is more. It has become higher and more important. It has become a battle in defense of Islam. What threatens is the behavior of those people, their practices throughout the world, and not only what they do or their practices in one certain country or in one specific region. This is a responsibility which we all must assume. Second, when it comes to the Aitam or the orphans and the Imdad, one of the merciful points, or what reflects the mercy, God's mercy, and this very important attention towards one certain social segment, the poor, and especially the orphans. Despite the fact that the Quran's job is not to focus on all details, especially the religious details, of course. This was a prime responsibility of the Prophet and the Messenger. But we find that the Quran stresses very much on this issue and on the orphans specifically. In the Quran, the orphans or the orphan boy and girl are mentioned 23 times in 12 or 22 verses, is mentioned on different occasions at different times. And when this is mentioned, it's also mentioned within the context of the general direction, not in the detailed issues, but the general approach, the general central directions which God spoke about in His Quran. In the Quran, God says, believe in God, worship God, and do not have doubt in God, and also behave well to the parents. Worship and good behavior towards the parents and the relatives, and then the orphans. Parents, relatives, and directly after that, we have the orphans and the poor and those relatives or the neighbors who are close to you, and those who are in need. God does not like those who do not help these people. And so for that reason, we have a lot. The verses of the Quran focus on helping the orphans, upholding their dignity, taking care of their situation, also working for their future, helping them get married. And one of the most important things which was recommended was to preserve the money and financing, the money of the orphans. God even promised those who would use the money of orphans for His own sake would be burnt in the fire. It's not just an ethical issue, it's also a religious issue. It's about heaven and promise of the fire for anyone who tries to inflict harm on the orphan. Our Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him, he also was an orphan. He very much cared about this issue with his behavior. and he's stressing on this meaning. And when we talk now about adopting orphans, we're not adopting, of course, financially. We're not speaking just on the financial perspective or education or health. Taking care of an orphan comprehensively when it comes to spiritual, taking care of him. When the orphan loses his father, he didn't only use he who provides for him, but he also lost the father, the guide, he who takes his hand in the difficulties of this life. So the assistance here must be spiritual, moral. Yes, part of it, of course, is money and financial support and providing the needs of life for these orphans. For example, in Amir al-Mu'mineen, in what he said that nobody should lose attention. I heard the Prophet Muhammad say, may peace be upon him, the Prophet said, and this was quoted by Ali, he said that he who supports an orphan, God will provide him or will reward him with heaven, and he also will punish he who takes the possessions or uses the money or spends the money of the orphan, he pledges him punishment of hell. Then he raises the level, God raises the level of such acts. And so in this verse, which is included amongst all Muslims, the Prophet said, I, together with he who cares for the orphan, I, together with he who cares for the orphan, are the two who will be in heaven, if this person believes in God. What does this mean? It doesn't say that this person will go to heaven only, but it also says that one who cares for the orphan will be in heaven, but at the same level of Prophet Muhammad, in the company of the Prophet Muhammad, the higher level of heaven. That's why the Prophet referred to two fingers. This is the level. So this was the level of the teachings of the Prophet Muhammad. This is the level of the teachings which we hear in the Quran. These teachings are very important. They also speak to a behavior of Islam, how the Muslims should behave, how one should abide and worship his God and believe in the religion of God, supporting our families, our wives, our mothers, our fathers, the people of our religion. Anyway, the Prophet, may peace be upon him, he addresses someone. He asks, do you want your heart to be tender? Meaning, our heart is tender. How can one's heart become tender and gentle? The psychologist should work on this even further, which helps us to fulfill our needs. If we do have needs from God, a need in this world, a need for the aftermath, a need in general. They say, why are you up against a dead end, you are facing a very difficult situation, but what would help you achieve your need? Do you want your heart to become tender and to achieve your need? Then help the orphan. It's not just about finance, about money, about medicine, about food and drink. Help the orphan. Put your hand on his head. Feed him. Bring him to your house on your dinner table where you're sitting with your wife and your children. Make him sit on this table. Feed him from your food so that your heart becomes tender and you can realize your needs. This is what is required. So with all of these instructions, we can understand that the most important aspect in adopting the orphan and taking care of him is to take him in. If we can leave the orphan with his mother, that's a priority. so that she can take care of him and give him her sympathy and help this mother and help this orphan and help this family. This is an absolute priority because this guarantees sympathy and care from all different aspects. And here, of course, we must salute all of the mothers. The mothers who lost their husbands, be it by martyrdom or natural death or for any reason. The wives of the martyrs, the mothers of the orphans, all the orphans, not only the orphans of the martyrs. I salute them. I know that many of these mothers have sacrificed, even sacrificed their own personal future, their own personal lives, for the sake of raising these orphans. And this is one of the greatest things done in worshipping God. It's one of the important, most important ways of jihad which a woman or a mother could do or a wife could do. If we can't leave him, this orphan, with his mother, he should stay with his relatives, his grandmother, grandfather, his relatives. If we can't, in a home, what is most important is that this orphan be in a family. The orphanages should be an exception. It's necessary sometimes, but an orphanage should be last. It should come last. And the focus, the main agenda of all of these institutions who take care of orphans must commit to these priorities, because these priorities have been highlighted in the verses and in the religious texts. And we thank God that we have a lot of institutions who take care of, or which take care of, the orphans. We have the Imdad Association, and the founder of this association is Imam Khomeini, may peace be upon his soul. This association grew under the auspices of Imam Khomeini, may peace be upon his soul, and it is continuing with its efforts in Iran and Lebanon under direct auspices of Imam Sayyid Khamenei, may God preserve him. And it still belongs to the same name, it still carries the same name, Imdad of Imam Khomeini. We hope that all of the faithful men and women, the good men and women, we hope that they provide support for the Imdad Association and the similar associations, so that they can carry this responsibility on behalf of all of us, because this common assuming of responsibility makes all of us closer to God and also makes our society and our families be subject to the mercy of God, or be granted the mercy of God. The brothers and sisters of the Imdad Association called for a campaign, and I support them. I call for supporting them, taking care and adopting 4,500 orphans. Everyone, with however much he can, he should do this. This campaign or this responsibility should be assumed by all of us. We should cooperate. We also hope from the brothers and sisters in the Imdad Association, God willing, as they always have done, as they have always lived up to their responsibility, lived up to their moral responsibility previously and now, we hope that they will continue assuming this responsibility regarding all of the families who have nobody to provide for them, especially the orphans, because this is something which we have been instructed to by the Prophet. Now I have a few words to say regarding the situation in Lebanon, and we'll conclude with the situation in the region. With respect to Lebanon, a few quick points. The first is the issue of dialogue between Hezbollah and the Future Movement under the auspices of Parliament Speaker Nabih Birri. This dialogue, I want to stress and reassure the Lebanese that it is going ahead seriously, in the serious required manner from both sides, and it has a big interest. It's in the big interest of the country. It's enough that all of us from the very beginning, since we began to hear about this dialogue until it actually began, the country relaxed to a high extent. It's enough that all of us from the very beginning, since we began to hear about this dialogue until it actually began, the country relaxed to a high extent. We're not saying that there's no longer any tension and friction, but it's now to a minimum level. There is no doubt that this serves the interests of the country. It serves the interest of all the Lebanese. Some tried at the beginning, when the dialogue was called for, some tried to express doubts. Will a dialogue be held? Will it not be held? The answer was that this dialogue was held. Yes, that's it. But some still continue expressing doubts about the results. What's the benefit? Will this dialogue reach any result or will it not? I tell you, after the two sessions which were held and the nature of the points which were discussed and the atmosphere of the dialogue and the two sides, I can speak with a very positive manner about the possibility of reaching results. And this is the likelihood. That is the bigger chance, the bigger likelihood is that we will reach results. We are realistic. From day one, we didn't raise the ceiling of expectations. We didn't agree on an agenda, which we know. We all know that it's very difficult to reach results in these issues under the current circumstances. So should we, there is a principle here which we should agree upon as Lebanese. Must we agree on everything or fight one another and be hostile and attack one another on the media and boycott one another politically? So do we only have these two choices? No other third choice? Isn't there a third choice to hold dialogue and be closer, communicate? The points we agree upon, we can work on them. The issues which we disagree upon, we delay them and we find a mechanism to continue dialogue. Isn't this logic? This is what religion says. This is what the national interests say as well. Of course, some people, this is not suitable for some. There are some in the country. I don't want to accuse certain factions. Maybe some people, some individuals have no interest of the Lebanese communicating or being close to one another. For the Sunnis and Shia to sit down and understand and speak to one another as Shia and Sunni in general or as political factions, because we don't allege that we by ourselves represent the Shia, nor do others, and others should not allege that the Future Movement only by itself represents the Sunnis. But there is no doubt that this dialogue has positive repercussions on the general sectarian atmosphere in Lebanon. There are some people who cannot put up with it, maybe who cannot stand it when Christians and Muslims sit down in Lebanon and hold dialogue, because somewhere in the world, and not only in Lebanon or in the region, somewhere in the world, there are some who want a Muslim-Christian war. And here I go back to the first point I made. There are some who want a Muslim-Christian war. And those silly, stupid people, the takfiris, they are helping these people. Maybe there are some countries, therefore, who it's not suitable for them. But we as Lebanese, it's the interest of the Lebanese people and the people of the region, the different factions, the influential parties, it's in their interest to hold dialogue and to find a solution for their problems in peaceful means. This is what we went to, and therefore we didn't raise the ceiling. Nobody said that this dialogue will solve the disagreement regarding the defense strategy or the weapons of the resistance or the presence in Syria, etc., etc. From the beginning, we said that we have a country which is called Lebanon. We have a region. Of course, we had a storm, but for 4 years we have been in the midst of a storm, security, political, economic, military, psychological, ideological storm, whatever you want to call it. So can we preserve this country, prevent its fall, prevent its collapse. If we do have issues where we can agree upon, can we invigorate them? If there are issues we can reach an understanding on, can we reach a general national understanding? Let's go ahead and reach an agreement. So therefore, you all took a look at the agenda. The agenda wants to reach this result. That's the ceiling. Is this ceiling possible? Yes, it is. It's certain. And if this serious approach continues from both sides, and it seems that it is, then of course we can reach the required results. On the other hand, this dialogue does not replace the other political factions in Lebanon, not at all. This is a dialogue between two sides, but is this a replacement? Does it take the place of a national dialogue or national understanding? No. But it's the road to a national dialogue and national understanding. Remember, on one of the occasions, I said that if we cannot meet on one table, we don't have a president to hold a national dialogue, or if there are some difficulties on the table of national dialogue, such a large table, then let's hold bilateral dialogue, three-way dialogue. Of course, I didn't say four-way dialogue, because then some people might have spoken about the four-way alliance. But let's have two or three sides sit down, maybe sometimes 10 different sides sitting down. Eight don't have a problem, but two have problems by themselves. Let these two sit down by themselves. If they can solve their problems, good. Then the 10 can meet once again and they can say, okay, we reached these results. If you agree, let's go ahead. So we are not speaking about this dialogue as something which replaces a national dialogue, nor are we speaking about it as a replacement for the dialogue between other political factions. But we support all forms of bilateral and three-way dialogue between any Lebanese political factions or any factions in Lebanon. Before, when the door to dialogue was opened between the Free Patriotic Movement and the Future Movement, some people said Hezbollah is annoyed. But no, not at all. We spoke to our allies and we said we support this dialogue, and we hope that this dialogue is successful, because if it does reach a result, then its blessings will have their repercussions on all Lebanese. Today as well, any dialogue between political parties, political factions, between political movements, Muslims, Christians, from both sides, this, of course, this is something which we need at the Lebanese level. And these dialogue sessions, if they achieve further success, they can become a national dialogue, a comprehensive national dialogue, which can reach certain results, not just futile sessions which could lead to more frustration and desperation instead of reaching results. So when one believes in himself and in his allies, he must go to dialogue. And if any one of his allies goes to dialogue, one should be happy and rest reassured, and also encourage this process. And that actually is our stance today. The Lebanese also, on previous occasions, when the media atmosphere was very hostile, remember, I used to say, keep open a door for returning. Nobody should raise the ceiling in the midst of the tense political atmosphere, because we Lebanese have no choice but to sit down together and hold dialogue and build our country together and to continue together. And therefore, the high ceiling, however much it is high, it must go back down, and people must come back and sit down together and give and take with one another until they reach results. And this leads us to the presidential elections. At the time where regional and world countries are preoccupied away from us, we, together with the other factions who insist or that insist on holding elections as soon as possible, however, the real efforts are made in internal dialogue. Any internal dialogue, especially Christian-Christian dialogue or between Christian factions, of course, can help in electing a president, and today, he who can help or what can help the Lebanese elect a president, I say this to all those concerned, are the Lebanese themselves. They should not wait for anything from the outside. Foreign parties cannot do anything. A foreign understanding or regional understanding can't have any impact. A internal understanding is what can help us or lead us to electing a president. Also, Lebanese in Lebanon, I call on the cooperation of the Lebanese, the people and the government and all the government institutions in addressing the repercussions of the storm which has struck Lebanon. Weather-wise, of course, has caused a lot of damage agriculturally and also in other aspects. This requires care and attention from the government and people to help one another, because sometimes the government might not be doing all its duties. Number three, what happened yesterday regarding the disagreement on the issue of garbage, in the end, the government session was adjourned and the Prime Minister said that he will not hold another government session before this issue is resolved. We hope that the influential political sides can intervene so that this issue is not left. Nobody should sit down and be stubborn as a result of the disagreement in the government. The disagreement is clear. Of course, people stick to their stances and the issue will go on for weeks and months and the country will go in a completely different direction. They took the country to a different direction, and this harm will be inflicted on all Lebanese and all Lebanese territories. It is shameful for anyone to use the issue of garbage, for example, the garbage and waste, as part of any political confrontation. We hope that the Prime Minister and all the politicians, because these ministers have their own leaders, they should not allow this issue to continue. Everything goes and stalls in this country 6 months or 1 year. This issue doesn't deserve the government and the country to be disrupted for 6 months. Our government will be disrupted and will stop functioning because some ministers have a disagreement about how to address the issue of waste here in Lebanon. We must raise our voices in this regard. Number four, regarding security and the threat on the border, there is no doubt that over the past few months, the security situation was very good, and thanks to the achievements of the Lebanese army and the security services, once again, I salute the martyrs and those who were wounded and all those who exerted big efforts to achieve this security locally and also on the border. However, caution is still called for, and here I also want to draw your attention. We don't want to limit the freedom of the media. However, sometimes we help in inflicting harm, because the terrorist groups, they wage a psychological war on the country like they're doing with the Lebanese kidnapped soldiers. And time to time, some leaks come out. They want to attack villages. They want to invade, occupy. And some media outlets consider this as a media catch or a media achievement. Some might say that this is in our interest because this gives an excuse that there is a real threat and people must go to the mountains and take up arms and confront and defend. No, we don't have such an interest. Our real interest is that people live in security and stability, even in psychological peace and psychological stability. The Lebanese army and the security services and the Mujahideen of the resistance have taken it upon themselves to carry this burden. They are out on the mountains in the snow. They are facing the danger. They are facing the challenge. They are bearing the pains. They are being wounded and they are being martyred. But for how long? How much can we make people have a peace of mind? The more we can make them have a peace of mind, the more we can do this, the better. And a lot of this is actually psychological warfare. Those sides are not capable of carrying out large-scale operations which sometimes the media outlets speak about. Also, a lot of the information which is published is baseless. Some of the information is baseless and some of it is exaggerated, because the armed groups, especially on the outskirts and on the eastern borders, they need any moral achievement. And you know that all of the efforts over the past few months in the Qolamoon area, all the efforts of the armed groups has focused on retrieving even one village. One village, the village of Fleetha, for example, or Al-Jibbi, or Asal al-Warad, and all of these groups with all of their capabilities haven't been able to do this. And this doesn't mean that they won't try, they won't continue their attempts. But anyway, regarding this point, I just want to say to our people, especially in Biqar and in the villages of Biqar, in the border villages, and also to all the Lebanese people, I want to say, in confronting this danger, the Lebanese are not incapable, they are not weak, and they don't need the assistance of anyone. With our own strength, with the army, people and resistance, just like we defeated the Israelis, we will also defeat the terrorists and the takfiris and defeat anyone who thinks of attacking Lebanon or harming the dignity and security of the Lebanese. So let us all rest reassured, whether it be snow, wind, snowstorms, or martyrs, or sacrifices, or wounds, pains, or burdens, or accusations, nothing of this can change anything regarding the will and determination of all of us, especially the Mujahideen, when it comes to defending their people, country, and their villages. And they are the ones who did this. They protected, and they are ready to continue assuming this responsibility until the last moment. So once again, I call on everyone not to take part in this intimidation and intimidate people. Of course, nobody can't guarantee that some operation might happen here or there. This takes place anywhere. France, Britain, Spain, all the countries now are in a state of emergency. But this talk about a large-scale military operation, anyway, people haven't been killed, and the country is full of men and of courageous people, and even women, strong women as well. There is no problem in this regard, and God willing, in confronting one of the biggest and strongest armies of the world, we were able to persevere and achieve victory. So what can we say regarding these armed groups, these terrorists? If we defeated one of the biggest armies, of course we can deal with these groups. Regarding the regional situation, we have a lot of large developments in the region, Palestine, the developments in Palestine, of course very dangerous developments in Palestine regarding the Palestinian people, or the Palestinian cause, or Al-Quds and the Aqsa Mosque, or the Gaza Strip, or the prisoners, or Syria, Iraq, Yemen, Bahrain, and other places in the region and in the world. Now, I don't have the time to speak about the regional situation, but I will have something to say in the next few days in the media during some interviews, and I will speak about the regional situation. He who wants to listen, let him listen. But with the remaining minutes which I have, I find myself obliged to focus or to address the issue of Bahrain. Over the past few days, the Bahraini authorities arrested the Secretary General of Al-Wifaq, Sheikh Ali Salman. May God preserve him. Of course, this step was very dangerous, and the continuation of his arrest is also very dangerous. However, when it comes to its significance, now, whatever one could say regarding condemnation, we cannot say enough when it comes to the condemnation. But with respect to the significance, there's something very important which we should focus on, that the Bahraini authorities have reached a dead end Everything has failed despite all what they did over the past years. We have people in Bahrain who are demanding their rights, legitimate rights, and these rights cannot be discussed or debated. One of the most basic rights in this era, whereby everyone speaks about democracy, is that they have an elected parliament, and that the parliament, which puts together laws, is elected. Not having a parliament and then at the same time appoint others. So you appoint a government to participate in putting together, in drafting the laws and the political process. What are these people demanding? They are saying, I want a parliament elected. Of course, they want an appropriate electoral law, and they want an elected parliament which enjoys complete authority, complete power. Number two, these people from day one have chosen peace in their movement, a peaceful movement. This is what distinguishes. Today, some might say, Sayyid, you were speaking about Bahrain, but what about here or there? Here, we're talking about our country. In this country, these people from day one said, these are our rights, these are natural, logical rights. Not just this, but there are a number of rights, but this is one of the most important rights, and they chose a peaceful manner. They opened fire on them, but they didn't return fire. They were killed on the streets, but they didn't respond by killing. It's not just they didn't use weapons or explosives or brought fighters or groups from the outside, even a knife. They didn't even use a knife. And they insist on the peaceful nature of this movement. And this is what further cornered the Bahraini authorities. The leadership of the opposition, the clerical leadership and the political leadership, all agree on the peaceful nature of the movement. First and foremost, Ayatollah Sheikh Isa Qasim, may God preserve him, and also first and foremost, Al Wifaq Association, led by Sheikh Ali Salman, may God preserve him. And you know, we Lebanese know that a peaceful, having abiding by the peaceful nature is very difficult. When someone is struck or when fire is opened against him, when he becomes angry, he takes up arms and begins to open fire if he has arms. If he doesn't have arms, he goes and buys weapons and begins to think day and night about weapons and about arms. But these people, their houses are attacked. Their families are attacked. Their clerics are imprisoned. Their leaders, their symbols are in prison. Their women, their wives are in prison. You know what happens in prison. And they were killed on the streets, but they didn't resort to violence. They didn't resort to any form of violence. They continued to insist on protests and speeches and the peaceful means, even the most peaceful means. There maybe are certain means which could be described as non-peaceful and non-violent, but they didn't even resort to these means. The Bahraini authority always spoke about a dialogue only as a way of talking, not a serious dialogue. But this opposition was always ready for dialogue because the nature of its movement and the nature of its peaceful goals is in agreement with dialogue. But the authorities always ran away from dialogue and the results of dialogue. The Bahraini authorities over the past few years, what did they hope for? They hoped that in the end people would get tired. They protested the first day, second day, first month, first year, second year, third year. We in Lebanon, we get tired from protests in 2 or 3 months. Okay, that's enough. These protests won't lead us anywhere. But we have people who have been protesting for 4 years. And for 4 years they have been striking and for holding strikes. And for 4 years they have been carrying out a peaceful movement. This is a distinguished movement in the world. In all different places, in most of them, the movement derailed and became violent very quickly. But in this place, the movement did not become violent, not because There are no men in Bahrain. There are men in Bahrain. The people of Bahrain are known for their courage and for their enthusiasm. This is their history. Not because nobody can use weapons in Bahrain. Let me say here, because the Al-Khalifa family can't put me in prison. Not because nobody can use weapons in Bahrain. Not because nobody can send arms to Bahrain. Not because there is no one who can send fighters to Bahrain. No, that's not the reason. Bahrain is just like any other country in the world. Any country, whatever be the measures, weapons can be sent, fighters can be sent, anyone can sabotage a small country, small groups can sabotage a country. The main issue is that the will of the clerics and the political leadership and the people of Bahrain is what is preventing such measures. They are the ones insisting on the peaceful direction, the peaceful approach. So the Bahraini authorities hoped that they would get tired, that they would just lose their interest. They believe that the international community, the government abandoned them. Even many of those who supported the Arab Spring, when it came to Bahrain, they stopped and they described the situation in Bahrain as unjust. They described it as something which was sectarian. However, it's not sectarian. Now, I don't have the time to speak about the issue of Bahrain and what the people were subject to. You know what we have in Bahrain? I didn't want to use this term, but I will, at least once. We have a project which is similar to the Zionist project. We have settlement activity in Bahrain. We have naturalization, whereby people come from all over the world. They are given citizenship, they are given jobs, they are being given high salaries, security, respect, dignity. At the same time, the original sons and citizens of Bahrain, whose fathers and grandfathers have been in that country, they are not given, their basic rights are taken away from them, and when they make any political demands, their nationalities are taken away from them, or they are imprisoned, and efforts are being made day and night to change the identity of the Bahraini people. So the time will come whereby the people of Bahrain will no longer be the Bahraini people. Just the same as what the Zionists are doing in Palestine, whereby they want the day to come when the real inhabitants of Palestine will be the Jews who come from all over the world. Isn't this injustice? So these people continued with dialogue despite all of the betrayal. So the Bahraini authorities found that the people didn't get tired, they didn't give up. In the end, the people will call on the leaders, on the clerics. We protested the first, second, third, fourth year. Okay, where have we reached? In the end, the political leaders will say, okay. But despite that, the political leadership and the clerics insist on continuing on this path. And the authorities, and I take responsibility for what I say, I want my colleagues in Bahrain to listen. The Bahraini leadership hoped that the Bahraini youth would be pushed towards carrying out violence by their oppressive acts. And it's in the interest of the Bahraini leadership for people to resort to violence, because when the opposition is accused of carrying out acts of violence, then the leadership will come and speak about national security and will strike the opposition, strike its leadership and crush it, and therefore put an end to this opposition. The Bahraini leadership over the past 4 years tried to push the opposition in Bahrain towards an armed confrontation, and it failed. I once again repeat, one of the most important reasons behind the peaceful nature of this movement is its culture and its leadership, because even if we have a leadership, but the people have a different approach, the people have a different culture, a culture of quickly going towards fighting, what can this leadership then do in such a case? Can it bring about miracles? But the culture and the leadership of this people allowed this peaceful nature to continue. How do we understand the arrest of Sheikh Ali Salman? Because he is one of the leaders and symbols of the peaceful movement which insists on the peaceful nature. And we might witness, and this is something which everyone must pay attention to, all of the leaders who insist on peaceful movement are being taken to prison to strike the peaceful movement and to strike the movement in general. What was the accusation made against Sheikh Ali? It was inciting to committing acts of violence. Now, if someone wants to make an accusation, make an accusation which is appropriate, an accusation which is really could be true. Everyone, all Bahrainis know Sheikh Salman. He is peaceful, peaceful, peaceful until one loses his breath. Even one who accompanies him with this peaceful movement will say, "You're too peaceful." This Sheikh, what is he accused of? He's accused of inciting people to resort to violence. Why? For the sake of toppling the regime. Although, you know, in the opposition there is a debate. Some people support toppling the regime, mean toppling Al-Khalifa, the Khalifa family, and some in the opposition adopt the stance of reforms, an elected parliament, a government which is elected, as we hear from some of the opposition. Sheikh Ali belongs to the second group. He didn't speak about toppling the regime, nor did he incite to commit violence. This is an allegation which is a lie, which was resorted to. What the government of Bahrain will discover is that what it is doing is an act of stupidity. It will not be able to put a stop to this movement, whether it be by arresting and imprisoning the former clerics and leaders, nor by arresting or imprisoning Sheikh Ali Salman. If it is able to arrest all of the Bahraini people, it might put a stop to the movement in the street, but it won't be able to stop the movement in the prisons. These people insist on continuing with their movement behind bars, and they also insist on this peaceful nature. And today I express my solidarity and our support. And from day one, we stood in support of this peaceful popular movement and its logical goals and its civil manner. And we call for solidarity and explaining the significance, the meaning of this movement. We call for pressures to be exerted on this government in order for this government to give the rights to the people and to release all of the prisoners, first and foremost Sheikh Ali Salman. On the other hand, I stress and I support, we all support the call made by your clerics and the call which was stressed by Sheikh Ali Salman from prison to insist on the peaceful nature. We must bear in mind that the Bahraini leadership wants, by this arrest and by the former arrest, it wants to push the Bahraini people to violence and to armed confrontation. This doesn't serve the interests of Bahrain or the people of Bahrain. Look at the countries of the region. Look at all of them. When they resorted to arms in those countries, what was the result? What could be the result in any country? Anyway, I wanted to talk about this issue on this occasion, and we pray to God that next year and our Ummah was able to come out and pass these tests successfully, and it was able to confront these challenges by achieving true victory, and the Ummah was able to overcome these very difficult phases by unity, by vigilance, by wisdom, by taking responsibility, and also by overthrowing all of these plans and conspiracies from within the Ummah and from outside the Ummah, which could have pushed the Ummah over the abyss. I pray to God, God bless you all. Happy anniversary, and assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.